英国保守党议员图根哈特2020年当选为英国议会外交事务委员会的主席，并于2022年到2024年期间担任英国安全大臣。他主张对中国强硬，并因为多次批评中国政府而在2021年3月被中方列入制裁名单。刚刚访问了台湾的图根哈特，在接受美国之音特约记者李伯安的专访时表示，中国对台湾和英国发动的攻击规模惊人。
Tom, thank you for taking this interview with us today. You have served as Security Minister, also chair in the Foreign Affairs Committee. So today, I noticed that you went to Taiwan recently. It seemed to be a quite productive trip. Could you describe, like, what did you talk about with them? How was your experience in Taiwan?
Well, it was a great pleasure to go to Taiwan. I've been trying to go for a number of years, but various things, including COVID and then elections, have somewhat got in the way. But it was a great pleasure to be able to go and see some old friends.Joseph Wu, the foreign minister, now National Security Council leader, has been a friend for many years. And there are others in the Taiwanese administration who I've worked with in various different ways. So it was a great pleasure to be able to see them and to talk about things that concern us all, whether that's the way in which Beijing has been bullying others or the way in which semiconductors are vital for us all. We're seeing a really important shift in the way that Taiwan is perceived around the world.Which is important for them, but of course, equally important for us.
Yeah, how do you think, how important Taiwan is to us?
Well, hugely. I mean, the reality is that it's not just TSMC, but it's actually the infrastructure of semiconductors that we're seeing emerging from China, from Taiwan today, that is remarkable. You know, we're seeing Chinese investment in various different areas of technology. That's certainly true and it's important, but we're seeing...really exquisite technology coming out of Taipei. And that's a really big development and one that means that the island matters enormously to us all.
So from a security perspective, when you were security minister, I'm sure you must have considered the possibility of China attack Taiwan. How do you think that will do to the world once China did that to Taiwan? You mentioned how important the semiconductor industry was.And if that happened, how much UK and the US will be affected?
Well, the truth is that the PRC is attacking Taiwan every day. We're seeing cyber attacks. We're seeing any amount of different assaults on Taiwanese civil liberties, attempts to influence democracy, attempts to change political outcomes are constant. And the Chinese Communist Party has been very clear that it will continue and may eventhreaten more. So we're already seeing attacks. And that's something we can learn off because the reality is we're also facing different attacks from the Chinese Communist Party, from the Chinese state. And so finding partners who really understand how to defend themselves, how to respond, and how to make sure that those threats don't get through is incredibly important for the United Kingdom. That's one of the things that I was listening to.
The UK seems to be in a very delicate situation now. Richard Reeves just went to China. And there's the Guardian broke yesterday saying the Chinese foreign minister might come to visit the UK as well. So now you're in opposition. Like, what do you see the danger right now we have in the UK battling China's threats?
I mean, I think the Starmer administration is wrong. I think they're conducting themselves poorly. It is absolutely correct that we should have a relationship with China and that we should...have trade. And in fact, just after David Cameron met the Dalai Lama, there were many, many threats from Beijing. But guess what? Trade increased. You know, China has a long history of making threats, but they're not trading with us out of charity. They're trading with us because they need the trade too. So we need to make sure we recognize that trade is not some sort of gift. It's because of a relationship that is important to Chinese companies as well. And instead, what we're seeing out of Rachel Reeves, out of Keir Starmer, and now out of David Lammy,It is an acceptance that a sort of normalization of the level of threat and attack that we're seeing out of China today. And in fact, Wang Yi only the other day was incredibly rude to Secretary Rubio, as you know, Secretary of State recently appointed in the United States. And so the idea that sort of tolerating this level of abuse and threat is something that we should be doing, or rewarding it by sort of formal visits is ridiculous. What we should be doing is defending the interests of the British people, defending the interests of British companies, and protecting our interests overseas by standing with partners like Taiwan, Japan, the Philippines, the United States, Australia, and many others. Mm.
Yes, but some British people, they might argue that they love TikTok, they love cheap EVs. Like, how would you tell them, how could you convince them these are actually security threats, not just to the state level, but also to the personal level as well?
Well, there are many different aspects of technology that we all love. And, you know, it's certainly true that short form video is something that's very popular, which is why Instagram has done a huge amount on it, and so has Twitter. And yes, it's true that TikTok invented it, but the reality is that others do it too. The difference with TikTok is not the medium, but the algorithm, the publishing tool, that, if you like, that underpins it. In Meta or Twitter or any of the others, it's controlled by a company that is interested in making money by effectively using your eyeballs for advertising. With TikTok, it's a bit different. And we know that. And that's why the code is written in Shenzhen, as you know, by people under the influence or potentially under the influence of the Chinese Communist Party. And we know as well, of course, that despite the huge pressure put on it by the United States, the Chinese Communist Party wasn't interested in a sale. Now, it says that there's more than just a corporate interest in this. Mm.
Did you see any instances while you were security minister how China used all those secret social media platform or any other means to attack the UK or
yes, influence the election? But you'll forgive me, I'm not able to go into the details of it. But consistently, I saw ways in which China used all the platforms at its disposal, either Ministry of State security officers, sometimes here in the United Kingdom, threatening British nationals, or some of them Hong Kongers, some of them from different places of origin. But the Chinese state has consistently been hostile, and we've seen the way in which the Chinese consulate in Manchester sought to assault people who were protesting perfectly legally outside the consulate. We've seen the overseas police service station set up, as you know, in the United Kingdom. And we've seen enormous amounts of corporate espionage, effectively state-sponsored, trying to close down British companies, steal British jobs, and do huge damage to the British economy. So all of these, this range of attacks, is something that we've seen consistently over many years.
So compared with Russia or Iranian attack, what makes China's threats distinct from them?
The scale. I mean, the truth is that while it's certainly true that Russia has attempted and in some cases completed assassinations in the United Kingdom, and Iran has tried and attempted to do serious harm to individuals here in the United Kingdom, including assassination attempts, it is the scale of the attacks that we're seeing out of China that is really quite remarkable.
How wide that is? Are there any area of like in the daily life in the UK that people don't know have been infiltrated by China?
Well, in so many ways, this is stretching beyond the ordinary, if you like. We've seen the Electoral Commission, for example, being targeted by actors out of China. We've seen, you know, different elements of the state targeted. And that's not including, you know, all the different private businesses that may be conducting research or inquiry or developing technology that would see profit grow in the United Kingdom. We're seeing corporate espionage which moves that technology, moves that profit overseas to China.
Yeah, recently there was one case about Yang Tengbo, the Chinese businessman who had access to royal family as well. And they did that through United Front's work and also 48 Group. But it doesn't seem like the UK has taken any action yet to really do anything about those groups yet. Why do you think the government is slowing down the process, also for the National Security Act, which you were pushing to pass the legislation? Why do you think the UK now are not taking much action anymore?
So in the 2 years that I was security minister, we arrested and charged more Chinese and Russian spies than in the previous decade. That's why I introduced the National Security Act. That's why I was so committed to making sure we took action. And I'm confident that the counterterrorism police, who are responsible for national security policing, and others will be taking these actions as incidents arise. I'm glad that they are using the visa system to do not just allow people in, but also to keep people out. That's an important purpose of a visa as well, is to make sure you're controlling presence in the United Kingdom. And, you know, there are incidents of individuals connected to the United Front Work Department who have been listed publicly, including the one you mentioned, but also Christine Lee, who, as we know, had a connection to Barry Gardiner, MP. So there are, you know, making sure we're calling that out and protecting ourselves is incredibly important.
Yes, there are many instances in the past few years as a consulting government, as you have personally like dealt with, but also universities. There are lots of Chinese students, researchers coming here, and it has been an alert to us for the past 2 years. Like, from your perspective, why do you think that's quite an important topic to discuss about university?
Well, look, Chinese students are very welcome to study in the United Kingdom. We're delighted to have Chinese people studying. We're delighted to have an open economy, an open society in which they can ask questions, they can challenge ideas, they can raise points that others may not have thought of, and they can say what they wish. What's concerning about it, it's not their presence, but what comes with them. So we know, because we've seen the connections, we've heard the stories, and we've seen the reports, that sadly, some of those Chinese students are pressured either directly by Ministry of State Security operators in the United Kingdom, or UFWD people, or they're pressured through their families back at home in Hong Kong or in Beijing or Wuhan or wherever it happens to be. So that what they're doing is they're not just here studying for a degree in whatever subject they chose, but they're also keeping an eye on fellow students, or indeed pressuring the university to change what it teaches. Now, clearly it's up to the Chinese state what Chinese students are allowed to study in China. It's up to them. I can have my own views, but that is a matter for the Chinese government. What is not a matter for the Chinese government is what British students are able to study in the United Kingdom. And what the Chinese state is trying to do, what the Chinese Communist Party is trying to do, is to impose the norms that you see in China on all students here in the UK just because there's a few Chinese students amongst them. Now, that's clearly unacceptable. It is completely unacceptable to silence debate in the United Kingdom in order to maintain a dictatorship abroad.
How could the UK protect those Chinese students here who are studying here?
Well, there are many ways that we already do, and you'll forgive me, I won't go into many of the details because we don't advertise them. But there are many ways in which we do already take action to protect Chinese students. The truth is, though, it's up to the Chinese state. It's up to the Ministry of State Security. It's up to the Chinese embassy to decide whether it wants to be a partner, whether it wants to see Chinese students profit from the opportunities before them, or whether it wants to turn the UK into a satellite of China. Now, if it were to do that, that would be a huge, huge harm, not just to us, but to the whole world. And I think that's exactly why the UK government has been, and I hope will continue to be, correct in standing up against Chinese threats in our university sector. That's also why we should be closing the Confucius Institutes. They have become, sadly, not outposts of education and culture, but outposts of pressure and influence on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party.
What do you see the alternative to the Confucius Institute? Should that be from Taiwan teachers coming here to teach Mandarin?
Well, they would be very welcome. There are others who would be very welcome, and there are other ways in which one can pay for it. They are no longer a gift from the Chinese people. They are now a tool of the Chinese Communist Party, and the two are not the same thing.
So let's turn to the international relations. So now we see the UK is a Labour government, but in the US we have Donald Trump coming back. It doesn't seem like those two governments are having the same ideology, and doesn't seem like. But from a security perspective, do you think there's something we should still work on despite all other differences?
So look, I mean, there's regularly been differences between Number 10 and the White House. That's not unusual at all. Over the last 70, 80 years, that's been pretty common. But the depth of the relationship between the United Kingdom and the United States is such that actually the surface, you know, the President and the Prime Minister are only a part of it. The reality is the security relationships are very, very deep. They go into, you know, the truth is that I served in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan with different members of the US Congress that I know very well because of that, very senior members of the US military. And, you know, I'm not alone. I mean, that's pretty common for anybody who's served in the UK military. So the depth of the relationship is very, very strong. And what we need to do is make sure that we are working together on those areas where we have a shared opportunity to support and strengthen ourselves. And where we disagree, you know, we'll have the debate that we have in free countries where we have it sometimes in private, sometimes in public. But that's fine. That's part of freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. And also about Hong Kong issue, like we do have lots of Hong Kong activists now residing in the UK, and the estimation from Hong Kong Watch report, there could be more than 400,000 by the next election. But China has been threatening their security here in the UK, and we saw the recent bounty on a 19-year-old girl, Chloe Chan. When you were security minister, you must have dealt with lots of threats from China on this matter, right? So do you think the Hong Kong people in the UK are now actually quite protected by the states?
So look, the threats against Hong Kongers in the United Kingdom, British nationals overseas, as many of them are, is completely wrong. That is interference in the UK's domestic affairs. It is unacceptable and it must stop. And I'm very glad that we introduced the National Security Act to make sure that we were able to offer people the protection they require here at home. Now, the very fact that the Chinese state is threatening a 19-year-old student suggests to me that they have internal weaknesses and internal fears that go much deeper than has regularly been understood, that there must be something very, very deeply wrong with the stability of the state for them to be so desperate to silence a 19-year-old. Strong countries don't try to silence children. I mean, it's as simple as that. People who are confident, people who have inner strength, they don't worry about what 19-year-olds say. Clearly, there's something really badly wrong in China and in Hong Kong that they feel frightened by a 19-year-old student. Now, that's quite telling. So what we've got to do is we've got to make sure that we protect those who are here, that we offer them the security that they require, so that they're able to enjoy the freedoms that any other British person would.
Mm. What do you think the current problem in China makes them so insecure about even 19 years old here?
We've just seen the arrest and disappearance of Gao Shanwen, an economist who was saying that growth is nowhere near the 4% that the Chinese state is arguing, but is possibly at 2, maybe 0. We're seeing increasing tension over the different ways in which state control has manifested itself in towns like Wuhan. And a lot of this is emerging out of COVID, we know that. And we're also seeing increasing instability in the Chinese military, possibly due to corruption, possibly due to loyalty to the chairman of the military commission, Xi Jinping, where we've seen a change, not just in ministers, but also in generals, in a way that doesn't suggest that the Chinese military, the PLA, the Communist Party's military, let's be honest, is stable.
Yeah. There's a recent report from CIA suggesting that the COVID may be a leak from the lab in Wuhan. Do you have any comments on this matter?
Well, I've been making this case since March 2020. It's the most likely, I mean, nobody knows, because, of course, the Chinese state, the Chinese Communist Party, silenced many people, including an early doctor,
Li Wenliang,
exactly right, who was silenced and then very sadly died of COVID. You know, there are some really impressive heroes in China today, working today, who are doing some extraordinarily impressive things for the good of humanity and for the good of their country and for the good of their fellow citizens. It's such a tragedy. The Chinese Communist Party is silencing them, because the truth is there is such an opportunity to work together. There is such an opportunity to promote opportunity for everybody. And, you know, we can see that China can do, you know, Chinese culture and democracy are compatible. We see it in Taiwan. We used to see it in Hong Kong. And, you know, the very fact that we were working together in various different ways, in very scientific ways, you know, before COVID, shows that we could do so again. The tragedy is that, you know, the Chinese state, through fear again, through loss of control again, silenced some of those early scientists, and we've seen the price.
Why do you think Chinese state is so obsessed with, like, doing all those things to conquer the West, also controlling the people, though? Is that out of insecurity or out of, like, ideology reason?
Well, I'm sure there are many reasons. You know, Kevin Rudd recently wrote a very, very good book on Xi Jinping, on his thought and on his on the roots of his ideology. And he refers to it as Marxist nationalism, a form of control based in Marxist theory. And I'm sure there's some element of ideology, and I'm sure there's some element of fear, as there always is in these matters.
Mm. And China has been passing all those information ideology through, like, TikTok or other social media here. Like you mentioned before, they did that through algorithm, and also they got information possibly from the local voters. Like, how would you tell the local, maybe youngsters, teenagers, how do you want them not to really get engaged with those ideologies at this point?
Well, I mean, in the UK, we believe in freedom of thought. I mean, you can engage with any ideology you like, and then we have an open debate as to what works and what doesn't. I mean, that's I'm fine with that. I don't want to silence people from having exposure to ideologies. They should have exposure to ideologies. They should think about what works. They should see the fact that communism destroyed China in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and it was only the opening up under Deng Xiaoping that you saw the free market and an easing of the communist centralizing controls under Chairman Mao that saw China prosper. You know, this idea that communism has saved China is complete rubbish. Communism destroyed China. Free markets were beginning to open it up, and sadly, Xi Jinping seems to be determined to close it down again.
Yeah, I was trying to ask this kind of question on the Chinese new AI platform, DeepSeek AI, but they couldn't seem to give me this kind of answer you just gave me. China seems to be advancing a lot in terms of AI capability.
That's right.
Just launched that. Like, how could that endanger the Western world right now?
Well, there are some fantastic Chinese scientists. There are some amazing Chinese programmers, and there's some brilliant Chinese entrepreneurs. Sadly, the most brilliant of them, people like Jack Ma, have fled China after they were detained only a few years ago. So, you know, Xi Jinping is doing everything he can to damage Chinese entrepreneurialism and ideas. He's certainly putting the party way before the interests of the country. And what we need to see is we need to see ways in which we can support China, not for China's sake, but for all of our sake. We want to have that open relationship. We want to have that prosperous exchange of ideas and of views. And what we're seeing with DeepSeek, for example, is we're seeing brilliant Chinese engineering. So it's reported. Let's see what actually works out. But it's reported that we're seeing brilliant Chinese engineering. But we're then seeing the state control laid across it, which makes it useless. Because if you can't trust the data because it's, you know that there are lies going in, then actually, you know, if you put garbage in, you get garbage out. If you put lies in, you get lies out.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you.